say they are spirits of the dead. Others spring from damnation.
We will have to find a way to stop this from happening again, Dalinar said softly, turning back to the group. We are the ones this world must be able to look to. We must provide stability, a rallying point. This is why I cannot rejoice to find Sadeas dead. He was a thorn in my side, but he was a capable general and a brilliant mind. We needed him. Before this is through, we'll need everyone who can fight.
Dalinar, Aladar said. I used to bicker. I used to be like the other high princes. But what I saw on that battlefield, those red eyes. Sir, I'm with you. I will follow you to the ends of the storms themselves. What do you want me to do?
Our time is short, Aladar. I name you, our new High Prince of Information, in command of the judgment and law of this city. Establish order in Urethiru, and make sure that the High Princes have clearly delineated realms of control within it. Build a policing force and patrol these hallways. Keep the peace and prevent clashes between soldiers like the one we avoided earlier. Sabario, I name you High Prince of Commerce. Account our supplies and establish marketplaces in Urethiru. I want this tower to become a functioning city, not just a temporary way stop. Adolin, see that the armies are put into a training regimen. Count the troops we have from all the high princes and convey to them that their spears will be required for the defense of Roshar. So long as they remain here, they are under my authority as High Prince of War. We'll crush their squabbling beneath a weight of training. We control the soulcasters and we control the food. If they want rations, they'll have to listen.
And us?
The scruffy lieutenant of Bridge 4 asked.
Continue to explore Urethiru with my scouts and scribes, Dalinar said, and let me know the moment your captain returns. Hopefully he will bring good news from Alethkar.
He took a deep breath. A voice echoed in the back of his mind as if distant.
Unite them. Be ready for when the enemy's champion arrives.
Our ultimate goal is the preservation of all Roshar, Dalinar said softly. We've seen the cost of division in our ranks. Because of it, we failed to stop the Everstorm. But that was just the trial run, the sparring before the real fight. To face the desolation, I will find a way to do what my ancestor, the Sunmaker, failed to do through conquest. I will unify Roshar.
Calame gasped softly. No man had ever united the entire continent. Not during the Shin invasions, not during the height of the Hierocracy, not during the Sunmaker's conquest. This was his task, he was increasingly certain. The enemy would unleash his worst terrors, the Unmade and the Voidbringers. That phantom champion in the dark armor. Dalinar would resist them with a unified Roshar. Such a shame he hadn't found a way to somehow convince Sadeas to join in his cause.
Ah, Toril, he thought. What we could have done together if we hadn't been so divided.
Father?
A soft voice drew his attention. Renarin, who stood beside Shallan and Adolin.
You didn't mention us. Me and Brightness Shallan. What is our task?
To practice, Dalinar said.
Other Radiants will be coming to us, and you two will need to lead them. The Knights were once our greatest weapon against the Voidbringers. They will need to be so again.
Father, I...
Renarin stumbled over the words.
It's just... me? I can't. I don't know how to... let alone...
Son... Dalinar said, stepping over.
He took Renarin by the shoulder.
I trust you. The Almighty and the Spren have granted you powers to defend and protect this people. Use them. Master them. Then report back to me what you can do. I think we're all curious to find out.
Renarin exhaled softly, then nodded.
3. Momentum.
34 years ago. Rock buds crunched like skulls beneath Dalinar's boots as he charged across the burning field. His elites pounded after him, a hand-picked force of soldiers both light-eyed and dark. They weren't an honor guard. Dalinar didn't need guards. These were simply the men he considered competent enough not to embarrass him. Around him, rock buds smoldered. Moss, dried from the summer heat and long days between storms this time of year, flared up in waves, setting the rockbud shells alight. Flamespren danced among them. And, like a Spren himself, Dalinar charged through the smoke, trusting in his padded armor and thick boots to protect him. The enemy, pressed on the north by his armies, had pulled back into this town just ahead. With some difficulty, Dalinar had waited so he could bring his elites in as a flanking force. He hadn't expected the enemy to fire this plain, desperately burning their own crops to block the southern approach. Well, the fires could go to damnation. Though some of his men were overwhelmed by the smoke or heat, most stayed with him. They'd crash into the enemy, pressing them back against the main army. Hammer and anvil, his favorite kind of tactic. The type that didn't allow his enemies to get away from him. As Dalinar burst from the smoky air, he found a few lines of spearmen hastily forming ranks on the southern edge of the town. Anticipation spren, like red streamers growing from the ground and whipping in the wind, clustered around them. The low town wall had been torn down in a contest a few years back, so the soldiers had only rubble as a fortification, though a large ridge to the east made a natural windbreak against the storms, which had allowed this place to sprawl almost like a real city. Dalinar bellowed at the enemy soldiers, beating his sword, just an ordinary long sword, against his shield. He wore a sturdy breastplate, an open-fronted helm, and iron-reinforced boots. The spearmen ahead of him wavered as his elites roared from amid the smoke and flame, shouting a bloodthirsty cacophony. A few of the spearmen dropped their weapons and ran. Dalinar grinned. He didn't need shards to intimidate. He hit the spearmen like a boulder rolling through a grove of saplings, his sword tossing blood into the air. A good fight was about momentum. Don't stop, don't think. Drive forward and convince your enemies that they're as good as dead already. That way they'll fight you less as you send them to their pyres. The spearmen thrust their spears frantically, less to try to kill, more to try to push away this madman. Their ranks collapsed as too many of them turned their attention toward him. Dalinar laughed, slamming aside a pair of spears with his shield, then disemboweling one man with a blade deep in the gut. The man dropped his spear in agony, and his neighbors backed away at the horrific sight. Dalinar came in with a roar, killing them with a sword that bore their friend's blood. Dalinar's elites struck the now broken line, and the real slaughter began. He pushed forward, keeping momentum, shearing through the ranks until he reached the back, then breathed deeply and wiped ashen sweat from his face. A young spearman wept on the ground nearby, screaming for his mother as he crawled across the stone, trailing blood. Fear spren mixed with orange, sinewy pain spren all around. Dalinar shook his head and rammed his sword down into the boy's back as he passed. Men often cried for their parents as they died. Didn't matter how old they were. He'd seen graybeards do it, same as kids like this one. He's not much younger than me, Dalinar thought. Maybe 17? But then Dalinar had never felt young, regardless of his age. His elites carved the enemy line in two. Dalinar danced, shaking off his bloodied blade, feeling alert, excited, but not yet alive. Where was it? Come on. A larger group of enemy soldiers was jogging down the street toward him, led by several officers in white and red. From the way they suddenly pulled up, he guessed they were alarmed to find their spearmen falling so quickly. Dalinar charged. His elites knew to watch, so he was rapidly joined by 50 men. The rest had to finish off the unfortunate spearmen. 50 would do. The crowded confines of the town would mean Dalinar shouldn't need more. He focused his attention on the one man riding a horse. The fellow wore plate armor, obviously meant to resemble shard plate, though it was only of common steel. It lacked the beauty, the power of true plate. He still looked like he was the most important person around. Hopefully that would mean he was the best. The man's honor guard rushed to engage, and Dalinar felt something stir inside him, like a thirst, a physical need. Challenge. He needed a challenge. He engaged the first member of the guard, attacking with a swift brutality. Fighting on a battlefield wasn't like dueling in an arena. Dalinar didn't dance around the fellow, testing his abilities. Out here, that sort of thing got you stabbed in the back by someone else. Instead, Dalinar slammed his sword down against the enemy, who raised his shield to block. Dalinar struck a series of quick, powerful blows like a drummer pounding out a furious beat. Bam, 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 bam. The enemy soldier clutched his shield over his head, leaving Dalinar squarely in control. Dalinar raised his own shield before him and shoved it against the man, forcing him back until he stumbled, giving Dalinar an opening. This man didn't get a chance to cry for his mother. The body dropped before him. Dalinar let his elites handle the others. The way was open to the Bright Lord. Who was he? The High Prince fought to the north. Was this some other important Light Eyes? Or didn't Dalinar remember hearing something about a son during Gavilar's endless planning meetings? Well, this man certainly looked grand on that white mare, watching the battle from within his helm's visor, cape streaming around him. The foe raised his sword to his helm toward Dalinar in a sign of challenge accepted. Idiot. Dalinar raised his shield arm and pointed, counting on at least one of his strikers to have stayed with him. Indeed, Yennin stepped up, unhooked the short bow from his back, and, as the Bright Lord shouted his surprise, shot the horse in the chest. "Hate shooting horses," Yennin grumbled as the beast reared in pain. "Like throwing 1,000 bromes into the storming ocean, Bright Lord." "I'll buy you 2 when we finish," Dalinar said as the Bright Lord tumbled off his horse. Dalinar dodged around flashing hooves and squeals of pain, seeking out the fallen man. He was pleased to find the enemy rising. They engaged, sweeping at one another, frantic. Life was about momentum. Pick a direction and don't let anything, man or storm, turn you aside. Dalinar battered at the Bright Lord, driving him backward, furious and persistent. He felt like he was winning the contest, controlling it, right up until he slammed his shield at the enemy and, in the moment of stress, felt something snap. One of the straps that held the shield to his arm had broken. The enemy reacted immediately. He shoved the shield, twisting it around Dalinar's arm, snapping the other strap. The shield tumbled free. Dalinar staggered, sweeping with his sword, trying to parry a blow that didn't come. The Bright Lord instead lunged in close and rammed Dalinar with his shield. Dalinar ducked the blow that followed, but the backhand hit him solidly on the side of the head, sending him stumbling. His helm twisted, bent metal biting into his scalp, drawing blood. He saw double, his vision swimming. "He's coming in for the kill," Dalinar roared, swinging his blade up in a lurching, wild parry that connected with the Bright Lord's weapon and swept it completely out of his hands. The man instead punched Dalinar in the face with a gauntlet. His nose crunched. Dalinar fell to his knees, sword slipping from his fingers. His foe was breathing deeply, cursing between breaths, winded by the short, frantic contest. He reached to his belt for a knife. An emotion stirred inside Dalinar. It was a fire that filled the pit within. It washed through him and awakened him, bringing clarity. The sounds of his elites fighting the Bright Lord's honor guard faded, metal on metal becoming clinks, grunts becoming merely a distant humming. Dalinar smiled. Then the smile became a toothy grin. His vision returned as the Bright Lord, knife in hand, looked up and started, stumbling back. He seemed horrified. Dalinar roared, spitting blood and throwing himself at the enemy. The swing that came at him seemed pitiful, and Dalinar ducked it, ramming his shoulder against his foe's lower body. Something thrummed inside Dalinar, a pulse of battle, the rhythm of killing and dying. The thrill. He knocked his opponent off balance, then went searching for his sword. Dim, however, hollered Dalinar's name and tossed him a pole axe, with a hook on one side and a broad, thin axe blade on the other. Dalinar seized it from the air and spun, hooking the Bright Lord around the ankle with the axe head, then yanked. The Bright Lord fell in a clatter of steel. Before Dalinar could capitalize on this, two men of the Honor Guard managed to extricate themselves from Dalinar's men and came to the defense of their Bright Lord. Dalinar swung and buried the axe head into one guard's side. He ripped it free and spun again, smashing the weapon down on the rising Bright Lord's helm and sending him to his knees, before coming back and barely catching the remaining guard's sword on the haft of the poleaxe. Dalinar pushed upward, holding the poleaxe in two hands, sweeping the guard's blade into the air over his head. Dalinar stepped forward until he was face to face with the fellow. He could feel the man's breath. He spat blood draining from his nose into the guard's eyes, then kicked him in the stomach. He turned toward the Bright Lord, who was trying to flee. Dalinar growled, full of the thrill. He swung the poleaxe with one hand, hooking the spike into the Bright Lord's side, and yanked, dropping him yet again. The Bright Lord rolled over. He was greeted by the sight of Dalinar slamming his poleaxe down with both hands, driving the spike right through the breastplate and into his chest. It made a satisfying crunch, and Dalinar pulled it out, bloodied. As if that blow had been a signal, the Honor Guard finally broke before his elites. Dalinar grinned as he watched them go, glory spren popping up around him as glowing golden spheres. His men unhooked shortbows and shot a good dozen of the fleeing enemy in the back. Damnation, it felt good to best a force larger than your own. Nearby, the fallen Bright Lord groaned softly.
Why?
The man said from within his helm.
Why us?
Don't know, Dalinar said, tossing the poleaxe back to Dim.
You don't know?
The dying man said.
My brother chooses, Dalinar said. I just go where he points me.
He gestured toward the dying man, and Dim rammed a sword into the armored man's armpit, finishing the job. The fellow had fought reasonably well. No need to extend his suffering. Another soldier approached, handing Dalinar his sword. It had a chip the size of a thumb right in the blade. Looked like it had bent as well.
You're supposed to stick it into the squishy parts, Bright Lord, Dim said. Not pound it against the hard parts.
I'll keep that in mind,
Dalinar said, tossing the sword aside as one of his men selected a replacement from among the fallen.
You all right, Bright Lord? Dim asked.
Never been better,
Dalinar said, voice faintly distorted by the clogged nose. Hurt like damnation itself, and he drew a small flock of pain spren, like little sinewy hands, up from the ground. His men formed up around him, and Dalinar led the way farther down the street. Before too long, he could make out the bulk of the enemy still fighting ahead, harried by his army. He halted his men, considering his options. Thaka, captain of the elites, turned to him.
Orders, sir.
Raid those buildings, Dalinar said, pointing at a line of homes. Let's see how well they fight while they watch us rounding up their families.
The men will want to loot, Thaka said.
What is there to loot in hovels like these? Soggy hog's hide and old rockbud bowls?
He pulled off his helm to wipe the blood from his face.
They can loot afterward. Right now I need hostages. There are civilians somewhere in this storming town. Find them.
Thaka nodded, shouting the orders. Dalinar reached for some water. He'd need to meet up with Satius, and something slammed into Dalinar's shoulder. He caught only a brief sight of it, a black blur that hit with the force of a roundhouse kick. It threw him down, and pain flared up from his side. He blinked as he found himself lying on the ground. A storming arrow sprouted from his right shoulder with a long, thick shaft. It had gone straight through the chainmail, just to the side of where his cuirass met his arm.
Bright Lord,
Thaka said, kneeling, shielding Dalinar with his body.
Kellek! Bright Lord, are you—
Who in damnation shot that?
Dalinar demanded.
Up there,
one of his men said, pointing at the ridge above the town.
That's got to be over 300 yards,
Dalinar said, shoving Thaka aside and standing.
That can't—
He was watching, so he was able to jump out of the way of the next arrow, which dropped a mere foot from him, cracking against the stone ground. Dalinar stared at it, then started shouting.
Horses! Where are the storming horses?
A small group of soldiers came trotting forward, bringing all 11 horses, which they'd guided carefully across the field. Dalinar had to dodge another arrow as he seized the reins of Full Knight, his black gelding, and heaved himself into the saddle. The arrow in his arm was a cutting pain, but he felt something more pressing, drawing him forward, helping him focus. He galloped back the way they'd come in, getting out of the archer's sight, trailed by 10 of his best men. There had to be a way up that slope. There, a rocky set of switchbacks, shallow enough that he didn't mind running Full Knight up them. Dalinar worried that by the time he reached the top, his quarry would have escaped. However, when he eventually burst onto the top of the ridge, an arrow slammed into his left breast, going straight through the breastplate near the shoulder, nearly throwing him from the saddle. Damnation! Dalinar hung on somehow, clenching the reins in one hand and leaned low, peering ahead as the archer, still a distant figure, stood upon a rocky knob and launched another arrow. And another! Storms, the fellow was quick! He jerked Full Knight to one side, then the other, feeling the thrumming sense of the thrill surge within him. It drove away the pain, let him focus. Ahead, the archer finally seemed to grow alarmed and leaped from his perch to flee. Dalinar charged Full Knight over that knob a moment later. The archer turned out to be a man in his 20s, wearing rugged clothing with arms and shoulders that looked like they could have lifted a chul. Dalinar had the option of running him down, but instead galloped Full Knight past and kicked the man in the back, sending him sprawling. As Dalinar pulled up his horse, the motion sent a spike of pain through his arm. He forced it down, eyes watering, and turned toward the archer, who lay in a heap amid spilled black arrows. Dalinar lurched from the saddle, an arrow sprouting from each shoulder as his men caught up. He seized the archer and hauled the fellow to his feet, noting the blue tattoo on his cheek. The archer gasped and stared at Dalinar. He expected he was quite a sight, covered in soot from the fires, his face a mask of blood from the nose and the cut scalp, stuck with not one but two arrows. "You waited until my helm was off," Dalinar demanded. "You are an assassin. You were set here specifically to kill me." The man winced, then nodded. "Amazing," Dalinar said, letting go of the fellow. "Show me that shot again. How far is that, Thaka? I'm right, aren't I? Over 300 yards? "Almost 4, Thaka said, pulling over his horse. "But with a height advantage." "Still," Dalinar said, stepping up to the lip of the ridge. He looked back at the befuddled archer. "Well, grab your bow."
"My bow?"
the archer said.
"Are you deaf, man?"
Dalinar snapped.
"Go get it."
The archer regarded the 10 elites on horseback, grim-faced and dangerous, before wisely deciding to obey. He picked up an arrow, then his bow, which was made of a sleek black wood Dalinar didn't recognize.
"Went right through my storming armor," Dalinar muttered, feeling at the arrow that had hit him on the left.
That one didn't seem too bad. It had punctured the steel, but had lost most of its momentum in doing so. The one on his right, though, had cut through the chain and was sending blood down his arm. He shook his head, shading his eyes with his left hand, inspecting the battlefield. To his right, the armies clashed, and his main body of elites had come up to press at the flank. The rear guard had found some civilians and was shoving them into the street.
"Pick a corpse," Dalinar said, pointing toward an empty square where a skirmish had happened. "Stick an arrow and one down there if you can."
The archer licked his lips, still seeming confused. Finally, he took a spyglass off his belt and studied the area.
"The one in blue, near the overturned cart."
Dalinar squinted, then nodded. Nearby, Thaka had climbed off his horse and had slid out his sword, resting it on his shoulder. A not-so-subtle warning. The archer drew his bow and launched a single black-fletched arrow. It flew true, sticking into the chosen corpse. A single Ospren burst around Dalinar like a ring of blue smoke.
"Stormfather!"
"Thaka, before today I'd have bet you half the princedom that such a shot wasn't possible."
He turned to the archer.
"What's your name, assassin?"
The man raised his chin but didn't reply.
"Well, in any case, welcome to my elites," Dalinar said.
Someone get the fellow a horse.
What? The archer said.
I tried to kill you. Yes, from a distance, which shows remarkably good judgment. I can make use of someone with your skills.
We're enemies. Dalinar nodded toward the town below, where the beleaguered enemy army was, at long last, surrendering.
Not any more. Looks like we're all allies now.
The archer spat to the side.
Slaves beneath your brother the tyrant.
Dalinar let one of his men help him onto his horse.
If you'd rather be killed, I can respect that. Alternatively, you can join me and name your price.
The life of my bright lord Yezriar, the archer said.
The heir. Is that the fellow,
Dalinar said, looking to Thaka,
that you killed down below?
Yes, sir.
He's got a hole in his chest, Dalinar said, looking back to the assassin. Tough break.
You monster! Couldn't you have captured him?
Nah. The other princedoms are digging in their heels. Refuse to recognize my brother's crown. Games of catch me with the high light eyes just encourage people to fight back. If they know we're out for blood, they'll think twice.
Dalinar shrugged.
How about this? Join with me and we won't pillage the town. What's left of it, anyway.
The man looked down at the surrendering army.
You win or not, Dalinar said. I promise not to make you shoot anyone you like.
Great, Dalinar said, turning his horse and trotting off. A short time later, when Dalinar's elites rode up to him, the sullen archer was on a horse with one of the other men. The pain surged in Dalinar's right arm as the thrill faded, but it was manageable. He'd need surgeons to look at the arrow wound. Once they reached the town again, he sent orders to stop the looting. His men would hate that, but this town wasn't worth much anyway. The riches would come once they started into the centers of the princedoms. He let his horse carry him in a leisurely gait through the town, passing soldiers who had settled down to water themselves and rest from the protracted engagement. His nose still smarted, and he had to forcibly prevent himself from snorting up blood. If it was well and truly broken, that wouldn't turn out well for him. Dalinar kept moving, fighting off the dull sense of nothingness that often followed a battle. This was the worst time. He could still remember being alive, but now had to face a return to mundanity. He'd missed the executions. Satius already had the local high prince's head, and those of his officers, up on spears. Such a showman Satius was. Dalinar passed the grim line, shaking his head, and heard a muttered curse from his new archer. He'd have to talk to the man, reinforce that in striking at Dalinar earlier, he'd shot an arrow at an enemy. That was to be respected. If he tried something against Dalinar or Satius now, it would be different. Thaka would already be searching out the fellow's family.
Dalinar? A voice called.
He stilled his horse, turning toward the sound. Torol Satius, resplendent in golden yellow shard plate that had already been washed clean, pushed through a cluster of officers. The red-faced young man looked far older than he had a year ago. When they'd started all this, he'd still been a gangly youth. No longer.
Dalinar, are those arrows? Stormfather, man, you look like a thorn bush. What happened to your face?
A fist, Dalinar said, then nodded toward the heads on spears. Nice work.
We lost the crown prince, Satius said. He'll mount a resistance.
That would be impressive, Dalinar said, considering what I did to him.
Satius relaxed visibly.
Oh, Dalinar, what would we do without you?
Lose. Someone get me something to drink and a pair of surgeons, in that order. Also, Satius, I promised we wouldn't pillage the city. No looting, no slaves taken.
You what? Satius demanded. Who did you promise?
Dalinar thumbed over his shoulder at the archer.
Another one, Satius said with a groan.
He's got amazing aim, Dalinar said. Loyal, too.
He glanced to the side, where Sadius's soldiers had rounded up some weeping women for Sadius to pick from.
"I was looking forward to tonight," Sadius noted.
"And I was looking forward to breathing through my nose. We'll live. More than can be said for the kids we fought today."
"Fine, fine," Sadius said, sighing. "I suppose we could spare one town. A symbol that we are not without mercy."
He looked over Dalinar again.
"We need to get you some shards, my friend."
"To protect me?"
"Protect you? Storms, Dalinar, at this point I'm not certain a rock slide could kill you. No, it just makes the rest of us look bad when you accomplish what you do while practically unarmed."
Dalinar shrugged. He didn't wait for the wine or the surgeons, but instead led his horse back to gather his elites and reinforce the orders to guard the city from looting. Once finished, he walked his horse across smoldering ground to his camp. He was done living for the day. It would be weeks, maybe months, before he got another opportunity. 4. Oaths. I know that many women who read this will see it only as further proof that I am the godless heretic everyone claims. From Oathbringer, Preface. 2 days after Sadius was found dead, the Everstorm came again. Dalinar walked through his chambers in Uirthiru, pulled by the unnatural storm. Bare feet on cold rock. He passed Navani, who sat at the writing desk working on her memoirs again, and stepped onto his balcony, which hung straight out over the cliffs beneath Uirthiru. He could feel something. His ears popping, cold, even more cold than usual, blowing in from the west. And something else, an inner chill.
"Is that you, Stormfather?" Dalinar whispered, "this feeling of dread?" "This thing is not natural," the Stormfather said. "It is unknown."
"It didn't come before, during the earlier desolations?"
"No, it is new."
As always, the Stormfather's voice was far off, like very distant thunder. The Stormfather didn't always reply to Dalinar and didn't remain near him. That was to be expected. He was the soul of the storm. He could not, should not, be contained. And yet there was an almost childish petulance to the way he sometimes ignored Dalinar's questions. It seemed that sometimes he did so merely because he didn't want Dalinar to think that he would come whenever called. The Everstorm appeared in the distance, its black clouds lit from within by crackling red lightning. It was low enough in the sky that, fortunately, its top wouldn't reach Uirthiru. It surged like a cavalry, trampling the calm, ordinary clouds below. Dalinar forced himself to watch that wave of darkness flow around Uirthiru's plateau. Soon it seemed as if their lonely tower were a lighthouse looking over a dark, deadly sea. It was hauntingly silent. Those red lightning bolts didn't rumble with thunder in the proper way. He heard the occasional crack, stark and shocking, like 100 branches snapping at once. But the sounds didn't seem to match the flashes of red light that rose from deep within. The storm was so quiet, in fact, that he was able to hear the telltale rustle of cloth as Navani slipped up behind him. She wrapped her arms around him, pressing against his back, resting her head against his shoulder. His eyes flickered down, and he noticed that she'd removed the glove from her safe hand. It was barely visible in the dark, slender, gorgeous fingers, delicate, with the nails painted a blushing red. He saw it by the light of the first moon above and by the intermittent flashes of the storm beneath.
"Any further word from the west?" Dalinar whispered.
The Everstorm was slower than a high storm, and had hit Shinovar many hours before. It did not recharge spheres, even if you left them out during the entire Everstorm.
"The span reeds are abuzz. The monarchs are delaying a response, but I suspect that soon they'll realize that they have to listen to us." A
I think you underestimate the stubbornness a crown can press into a man or woman's mind, Navani.
Dalinar had been out during his share of high storms, particularly in his youth. He'd watched the chaos of the storm wall pushing rocks and refuse before it, the sky splitting lightning, the claps of thunder. High storms were the ultimate expression of nature's power, wild, untamed, sent to remind man of his insignificance. However, high storms never seemed hateful. This storm was different. It felt vengeful. Staring into that blackness below, Dalinar thought he could see what it had done. A series of impressions thrown at him in anger. The storm's experiences as it had slowly crossed Roshar. Houses ripped apart, screams of the occupants lost to the tempest. People caught in their fields, running in a panic before the unpredicted storm. Cities blasted with lightning, towns cast into shadow, fields swept barren. And vast seas of glowing red eyes coming awake like spheres suddenly renewed with stormlight. Dalinar hissed out a long, slow breath, the impressions fading.
"Was that real?" he whispered.
"Yes," the Stormfather said. "The enemy rides the storm. He's aware of you, Dalinar."
Not a vision of the past, not some possibility of the future. His kingdom, his people, his entire world was being attacked. He drew a deep breath. At the very least, this wasn't the singular tempest that they'd experienced when the Everstorm had clashed with the Highstorm for the first time. This seemed less powerful. It wouldn't tear down cities, but it did rain destruction upon them, and the winds would attack in bursts, hostile, even deliberate. The enemy seemed more interested in preying upon the small towns, the fields, the people caught unaware. Though it was not as destructive as he'd feared, it would still leave thousands dead. It would leave cities broken, particularly those without shelter to the west. More importantly, it would steal the Parshman laborers and turn them into void-bringers, loosed on the public. All in all, this storm would exact a price in blood from Roshar that hadn't been seen since, well, since the Desolations. He lifted his hand to grasp Navani's as she in turn held to him.
"You did what you could, Dalinar," she whispered after a time watching. "Don't insist on carrying this failure as a burden."
"I won't."
She released him and turned him around, away from the sight of the storm. She wore a dressing gown, not fit to go about in public, but also not precisely immodest. Save for that hand with which she caressed his chin.
"I," she whispered, "don't believe you, Dalinar Kholin. I can read the truth in the tightness of your muscles, the set of your jaw. I know that you, while being crushed beneath a boulder, would insist that you've got it under control and ask to see field reports from your men."
The scent of her was intoxicating, and those entrancing, brilliant violet eyes.
"You need to relax, Dalinar," she said.
"Navani," he said.
She looked at him, questioning, so beautiful. Far more gorgeous than when they'd been young. He'd swear it. For how could anyone be as beautiful as she was now? He seized her by the back of the head and pulled her mouth to his own. Passion woke within him. She pressed her body to his, breasts pushing against him through the thin gown. He drank of her lips, her mouth, her scent. Passion spren fluttered around them like crystal flakes of snow. Dalinar stopped himself and stepped back.
"Dalinar," she said as he pulled away, "your stubborn refusal to get seduced is making me question my feminine wiles."
"Control is important to me, Navani," he said, his voice hoarse.
He gripped the stone balcony wall, white-knuckled.
"You know how I was, what I became, when I was a man with no control. I will not surrender now."
She sighed and sidled up to him, pulling his arm free of the stone, then slipping under it.
I won't push you, but I need to know. Is this how it's going to continue? Teasing? Dancing on the edge?
No, he said, staring out over the darkness of the storm. That would be an exercise in futility. A general knows not to set himself up for battles he cannot win.
Then what?
I'll find a way to do it right. With oaths. The oaths were vital. The promise. The act of being bound together.
How?
She said, then poked him in the chest.
I'm as religious as the next woman. More than most, actually. But Kadash turned us down, as did Ladent, even Rushu. She squeaked when I mentioned it and literally ran away.
Chanada, Delinar said, speaking of the senior Ardent of the war camps. She spoke to Kadash and had him go to each of the Ardents. She probably did it the moment she heard we were courting.
So, no Ardent will marry us, Nabani said. They consider us siblings. You're stretching to find an impossible accommodation. Continue with this, and it's going to leave a lady wondering if you actually care.
Have you ever thought that? Dalinar said. Sincerely.
Well, no.
You are the woman I love, Dalinar said, pulling her tight. A woman I have always loved.
Then who cares? She said. Let the Ardents hide a damnation with ribbons around their ankles.
Blasphemous.
I'm not the one telling everyone that God is dead.
Not everyone, Delinar said. He sighed, letting go of her, with reluctance, and walked back into his rooms where a brazier of coal radiated welcome warmth, as well as the room's only light. They had recovered his fabrial heating device from the war camps, but didn't yet have the stormlight to run it. The scholars had discovered long chains and cages, apparently used for lowering spheres down into the storms, so they'd be able to renew their spheres if the high storms ever returned. In other parts of the world, the weeping had restarted, then fitfully stopped. It might start again, or the proper storms might start up. Nobody knew, and the Stormfather refused to enlighten him. Navani entered and pulled the thick drapings closed over the doorway, tying them tightly in place. This room was heaped with furniture, chairs lining the walls, rolled rugs stacked atop them. There was even a standing mirror. The images of twisting windspren along its sides bore the distinctly rounded look of something that had been carved first from weevil wax, then soul-cast into hardwood. They had deposited all this here for him, as if worried about their high prince living in simple stone quarters.
"Let's have someone clear this out for me tomorrow," Dalinar said. "There's room enough for it in the chamber next door, which we can turn into a sitting room or a common room."
Nabani nodded as she settled onto one of the sofas. He saw her reflected in the mirror, her hand still casually uncovered, gown dropping to the side, exposing neck, collarbone, and some of what was beneath. She wasn't trying to be seductive right now. She was merely comfortable around him. Intimately familiar, past the point where she felt embarrassed for him to see her uncovered. It was good that one of them was willing to take the initiative in the relationship. For all his impatience to advance on the battlefield, this was one area in which he'd always needed encouragement, same as it had been all those years ago.
"When I married last," Dalinar said softly, "I did many things wrong. I started wrong."
"I wouldn't say that. You married for Shardplate, but many marriages are for political reasons. That doesn't mean you were wrong. If you'll recall, we all encouraged you to do it."
As always, when he heard his dead wife's name, the word was replaced to his hearing with a breezy sound of rushing air. The name couldn't gain purchase in his mind any more than a man could hold to a gust of wind.
"I'm not trying to replace her, Dalinar,"
Navani said, suddenly sounding concerned.
I know you still have affection for It's all right. I can share you with her memory.
Oh, how little they all understood. He turned toward Navani, set his jaw against the pane, and said it.
I don't remember her, Navani.
She looked to him with a frown, as if she thought she hadn't heard him correctly.
I can't remember my wife at all, he said. I don't know her face. Portraits of her are a fuzzy smudge to my eyes. Her name is taken from me whenever spoken, like someone has plucked it away. I don't remember what she and I said when we first met. I can't even remember seeing her at the feast that night when she first arrived. It's all a blur. I can remember some events surrounding my wife, but nothing of the actual details. It's all just gone.
Navani raised her safe-hand fingers to her mouth, and from the way her brow knit with concern, he figured he must look like he was in agony. He slumped down in a chair across from her.
The alcohol?
She asked softly.
Something more.
She breathed out.
The old magic. You said you knew both your boon and your curse?
He nodded.
Oh, Dalinar.
People glance at me when her name comes up, Dalinar continued, and they give me these looks of pity. They see me keeping a stiff expression, and they assume I'm being stoic. They infer hidden pain when really I'm just trying to keep up. It's hard to follow a conversation where half of it keeps slipping away from your brain. Navani, maybe I did grow to love her. I can't remember. Not one moment of intimacy, not one fight, not a single word she ever said to me. She's gone, leaving debris that mars my memory. I can't remember how she died. That one gets to me, because there are parts of that day I know I should remember. Something about a city in rebellion against my brother and my wife being taken hostage?
That, and a long march alone, accompanied only by hatred and the thrill. He remembered those emotions vividly. He'd brought vengeance to those who had taken his wife from him. Navani settled down on the seat beside Dalinar, resting her head on his shoulder.
Would that I could create a Fabriel, she whispered, to take away this kind of pain.
I think losing her must have hurt me terribly, Dalinar whispered, because of what it drove me to do. I am left with only the scars. Regardless, Navani, I want it to be right with us. No mistakes. Done properly with oaths spoken to you before someone.
Mere words.
Words are the most important things in my life right now.
She parted her lips, thoughtful.
Elokar.
I wouldn't want to put him in that position.
A foreign priest. From the Azish, maybe. They're almost foreign.
That would be tantamount to declaring myself a heretic. It goes too far. I will not defy the Vorin Church.
He paused.
I might be willing to sidestep it, though.
What?
She asked. He looked upward toward the ceiling.
Maybe we go to someone with authority greater than theirs.
You want a Spren to marry us, she said, sounding amused. Using a foreign priest would be heretical, but not a Spren?
The Stormfather is the largest remnant of honor, Dalinar said. He's a sliver of the Almighty himself, and he's the closest thing to a god we have left.
Oh, I'm not objecting, Navani said. I'd let a confused dishwasher marry us. I just think it's a little unusual.
It's the best we're going to get, assuming he is willing.
He looked at Navani, then raised his eyebrows and shrugged.
Is that a proposal?
Yes.
Dalinar Kolin, she said. Surely you can do better.
He rested his hand on the back of her head, touching her black hair, which she had left loose.
Better than you, Navani? No. I don't think that I could. I don't think that any man has ever had a chance better than this.
She smiled, and her only reply was a kiss. Delinar was surprisingly nervous as, several hours later, he rode one of Urethiru's strange fabrial lifts toward the roof of the tower. The lift resembled a balcony, one of many that lined a vast open shaft in the middle of Urethiru, a columnar space as wide as a ballroom which stretched up from the first floor to the last one. The tiers of the city, despite looking circular from the front, were actually more half-circles, with the flat sides facing east. The edges of the lower levels melded into the mountains to either side, but the very center was open to the east. The rooms up against that flat side had windows there, providing a view toward the origin. And here, in this central shaft, those windows made up one wall. A pure, single, unbroken pane of glass hundreds of feet tall. In the day, that lit the shaft with brilliant sunlight. Now it was dark with the gloom of night. The balcony crawled steadily along a vertical trench in the wall. Adolin and Renarin rode with him, along with a few guards and Shallan Devar. Navani was already up above. The group stood on the other side of the balcony, giving him space to think. And to be nervous. Why should he be nervous? He could hardly keep his hands from shaking. Storms. You'd think he was some silk-covered virgin, not a general well into his middle years. He felt a rumbling deep within him. The Stormfather was being responsive at the moment, for which he was grateful. "I'm surprised," Delinar whispered to the Spren. "You agreed to this so willingly." "Grateful, but still surprised."
"I respect all oaths," the Stormfather responded.
"What about foolish oaths, made in haste or in ignorance?"
"There are no foolish oaths. All are the mark of men and true Spren over beasts and sub-Spren. The mark of intelligence, free will, and choice."
Delinar chewed on that and found he was not surprised by the extreme opinion. Spren should be extreme. They were forces of nature. But was this how Honor himself, the Almighty, had thought? The balcony ground its inexorable way toward the top of the tower. Only a handful of the dozens of lifts worked. Back when Urethiru flourished, they all would have been going at once. They passed level after level of unexplored space, which bothered Delinar. Making this his fortress was like camping in an unknown land. The lift finally reached the top floor, and his guards scrambled to open the gates. Those were from Bridge 13 these days. He'd assigned Bridge 4 to other responsibilities, considering them too important for simple guard duty now that they were close to becoming Radiants. Increasingly anxious, Delinar led the way past several pillars designed with representations of the Orders of Radiance. A set of steps took him up through a trap door onto the very roof of the tower. Although each tier was smaller than the one below it, this roof was still over 100 yards wide. It was cold up here, but someone had set up braziers for warmth and torches for light. The night was strikingly clear, and high above, Starspren swirled and made distant patterns. Delinar wasn't sure what to make of the fact that no one, not even his sons, had questioned him when he'd announced his intent to marry in the middle of the night on the roof of the tower. He searched out Navani and was shocked to see that she'd found a traditional bridal crown. The intricate headdress of jade and turquoise complemented her wedding gown. Red for luck, it was embroidered with gold and shaped in a much looser style than the Hava, with wide sleeves and a graceful drape. Should Delinar have found something more traditional to wear himself? He suddenly felt like a dusty, empty frame hung beside the gorgeous painting that was Navani in her wedding regalia. Elikar stiffly stood at her side, wearing a formal golden coat and loose Takama underskirt. He was paler than normal, following the failed assassination attempt during the Weeping, where he'd nearly bled to death.
He'd been resting a great deal lately. Though they'd decided to forego the extravagance of a traditional Alethi wedding, they had invited some others. Brightlord Aladar and his daughter, Sabariel and his mistress, Calami and Teshev to act as witnesses. He felt relieved to see them there. He'd feared Navani would be unable to find women willing to notarize the wedding. A smattering of Dalinar's officers and scribes filled out the small procession. At the very back of the crowd, gathered between the braziers, he spotted a surprising face. Kadash, the Ardent, had come as requested. His scarred, bearded face didn't look pleased, but he had come. A good sign. Perhaps with everything else happening in the world, a high prince marrying his widowed sister-in-law wouldn't cause too much of a stir. Dalinar stepped up to Navani and took her hands, one shrouded in a sleeve, the other warm to his touch.
"You look amazing," he said. "How did you find that?"
"A lady must be prepared."
Dalinar looked to Elikar, who bowed his head to Dalinar. "This will further muddy the relationship between us," Dalinar thought, reading the same sentiment on his nephew's features. Gavilar would not appreciate how his son had been handled. Despite his best intentions, Dalinar had trodden down the boy and seized power. Elikar's time recuperating had worsened the situation, as Dalinar had grown accustomed to making decisions on his own. However, Dalinar would be lying to himself if he said that was where it had begun. His actions had been done for the good of Alethkar, for the good of Roshar itself, but that didn't deny the fact that, step by step, he'd usurped the throne, despite claiming all along he had no intention of doing so. Dalinar let go of Navani with one hand and rested it on his nephew's shoulder.
"I'm sorry, son," he said.
"You always are, uncle," Elikar said. "It doesn't stop you, but I don't suppose that it should. Your life is defined by deciding what you want, then seizing it. The rest of us could learn from that, if only we could figure out how to keep up."
Dalinar winced. "I have things to discuss with you, plans that you might appreciate. But for tonight I simply ask your blessing, if you can find it to give."
"This will make my mother happy," Elikar said. "So, fine."
Elikar kissed his mother on the forehead, then left them, striding across the rooftop. At first, Dalinar worried the king would stalk down below, but he stopped beside one of the more distant braziers, warming his hands.
"Well," Dabani said, "the only one missing is your spren, Dalinar. If he's going to..."
A strong breeze struck the top of the tower, carrying with it the scent of recent rainfall, of wet stone and broken branches. Navani gasped, pulling against Dalinar. A presence emerged in the sky. The Stormfather encompassed everything, a face that stretched to both horizons, regarding the men imperiously. The air became strangely still, and everything but the tower's top seemed to fade. It was as if they had slipped into a place outside of time itself. Light eyes and guards alike murmured or cried out. Even Dalinar, who had been expecting this, found himself taking a step backward, and he had to fight the urge to cringe down before the spren.
"Oaths," the Stormfather rumbled, "are the soul of righteousness. If you are to survive the coming tempest, oaths must guide you."
"I am comfortable with oaths, Stormfather," Dalinar called up to him. "As you know."
"Yes, the first in millennia to bind me."
Somehow, Dalinar felt the spren's attention shifting to Navani.
"And you, do oaths hold meaning to you?"
"The right oaths," Navani said.
"And your oath to this man?"
"I swear it to him, and to you, and any who care to listen. Dalinar Kholin is mine and I am his."
"You have broken oaths before."
"All people have," Navani said, unbowed. "We're frail and foolish. This one I will not break." I vow it.
The Stormfather seemed content with this, though it was far from a traditional Alethi wedding oath.
Bondsmith? He asked.
I swear it likewise, Delinar said, holding to her. Navani Kolin is mine and I am hers. I love her.
So be it.
Delinar had anticipated thunder, lightning, some kind of celestial trump of victory. Instead, the timelessness ended. The breeze passed. The Stormfather vanished. All through the gathered guests, smoky blue Osprin rings burst out above heads. But not Navani's. Instead, she was ringed by Glory Spren, the golden lights rotating above her head. Nearby, Sabariel rubbed his temple, as if trying to understand what he'd seen. Dalinar's new guards sagged, looking suddenly exhausted. Adolin, being Adolin, let out a whoop. He ran over, trailing Joy Spren in the shape of blue leaves that hurried to keep up with him. He gave Dalinar, then Navani, enormous hugs. Renarin followed, more reserved, but, judging from the wide grin on his face, equally pleased. The next part became a blur, shaking hands, speaking words of thanks, insisting that no gifts were needed as they'd skipped that part of the traditional ceremony. It seemed that the Stormfather's pronouncement had been dramatic enough that everyone accepted it. Even Elikar, despite his earlier pique, gave his mother a hug and Dalinar a clasp on the shoulder before going below. That left only Kadash. The Ardent waited to the end. He stood with hands clasped before him as the rooftop emptied. To Dalinar, Kadash had always looked wrong in those robes. Though he wore the traditional squared beard, it was not an Ardent that Dalinar saw. It was a soldier, with a lean build, dangerous posture, and keen light violet eyes. He had a twisting old scar running up to and around the top of his shaved head. Kadash's life might now be one of peace and service, but his youth had been spent at war. Dalinar whispered a few words of promise to Navani, and she left him to go to the level below, where she'd ordered food and wine to be set up. Dalinar stepped over to Kadash, confident. The pleasure of finally having done what he'd postponed for so long surged through him. He was married to Navani. This was a joy that he'd assumed lost to him since his youth, an outcome he hadn't even allowed himself to dream would be his. He would not apologize for it, or for her.
"Bright Lord," Kadash said quietly. "Formality, old friend?"
"I wish I could only be here as an old friend," Kadash said softly. "I have to report this, Dalinar. The Ardentia will not be pleased.
Surely they cannot deny my marriage if the Stormfather himself blessed the union."
"A Spren? You expect us to accept the authority of a Spren?"
"A remnant of the Almighty."
"Dalinar, that's blasphemy," Kadash said, voice pained.
"Kadash, you know I'm no heretic. You've fought by my side.
That's supposed to reassure me? Memories of what we did together, Dalinar? I appreciate the man you have become. You should avoid reminding me of the man you once were."
Dalinar paused, and a memory swirled up from the depths inside him, one he hadn't thought of in years. One that surprised him. Where had it come from? He remembered Kadash, bloodied, kneeling on the ground, having retched until his stomach was empty. A hardened soldier who had encountered something so vile that even he was shaken. He'd left to become an Ardent the next day.
"The Rift," Dalinar whispered. "Rathalos."
"Dark times need not be dredged up," Kadash said. "This isn't about that day, Dalinar. It's about today. And what you've been spreading among the scribes. Talk of these things you've seen in visions."
"Holy messages," Dalinar said, feeling cold. "Sent by the Almighty."
"Holy messages claiming the Almighty is dead?" Kadash said. "Arriving on the eve of the return of the Voidbringers? Dalinar, can't you see how this looks? I'm your Ardent,
technically your slave, and yes, perhaps still your friend. I've tried to explain to the councils in Carbranth and Yakaved that you mean well. I tell the Ardents of the Holy Enclave that you're looking back toward when the Knights Radiant were pure, rather than their eventual corruption. I tell them that you have no control over these visions. But, Dalinar, that was before you started teaching that the Almighty was dead. They're angry enough over that, and now you've gone and defied conventions, spitting in the eyes of the Ardents? I personally don't think it matters if you marry Navani. That prohibition is outdated, to be sure. But what you've done tonight...
Dalinar reached to place a hand on Kadash's shoulder, but the man pulled away.
"Old friend," Dalinar said softly, "honor might be dead, but I have felt something else, something beyond, a warmth and a light. It is not that God has died. It is that the Almighty was never God. He did his best to guide us, but he was an impostor, or perhaps only an agent, a being not unlike a Spren. He had the power of a god, but not the pedigree."
Kadash looked at him, eyes widening.
"Please, Dalinar, don't ever repeat what you just said. I think I can explain away what happened tonight. Maybe. But you don't seem to realize you're aboard a ship barely afloat in a storm while you insist on doing a jig on the prow."
"I will not hold back truth if I find it, Kadash," Dalinar said. "You just saw that I am literally bound to a spren of oaths. I don't dare lie."
"I don't think you would lie, Dalinar," Kadash said. "But I do think you can make mistakes. Do not forget that I was there. You are not infallible."
"There?" Dalinar thought as Kadash backed up, bowed, then turned and left.
"What does he remember that I cannot?"
Dalinar watched him go. Finally, he shook his head and went to join the midnight feast, intent on being done with it as soon as was seemly. He needed time with Navani, his wife. 5. Hearthstone. I can point to the moment when I decided for certain this record had to be written. I hung between realms, seeing into Shadesmar, the realm of the Spren, and beyond.